on and thank you all. There are not real people in New Wilson. But I love getting out of the building and mainly to see people doing great work. So as I've done before, and I'll continue to do every time I see everyone here, thank you for all the hard work that you're doing on the State Rehabilitation Council. Very important work that's helping to shape the district government. So on behalf of the mayor, I just want to say thank you all. So today I have the pleasure of swearing in two commissioners, Pamela and Christopher. So what we'll do is have you both raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, and state your name.
Christopher Early.
Having been appointed as a member of.
Have been appointed as a member of.
The State Rehabilitation Council.
The State Rehabilitation Council.
Of the District of Columbia.
Of the District of Columbia.
Do solemnly swear or affirm that.
Do solemnly swear and affirm that.
I, and state your name.
I, Pamela Carricker.
Will support and defend. The Constitution of the United States. And the laws of the District of Columbia. That I will perform such duties. That may be assigned to me. As a member of this commission.
To the best of my ability.
Without fear or favor. That I will exercise my best judgment. And consider all matters before me. From the viewpoint of the best interest. Of the District of Columbia. And I will faithfully discharge these duties. Thank you. Congratulations.
Thank you.
FY14, FY15, our projected budget, and FY16, where we are currently. As you can see, from 14 to 15, we dropped a little bit in our income, and our spending went up. We did serve a lot more. We did provide a lot more services last fiscal year. So this is just a snapshot of it. I'll get to 16 in a bit, but focus on 14 and 15 for now, the column B and column C.
When you say a lot more, 10% more, do you know, percentage more?
So it was about a million.
No, but more people, did you mean?
I mean, I'm just saying, when you say a lot more to me, what does that translate that to a percentage? I mean, is that like...
So last fiscal year, we served about, or provided services to about 7,000 individuals.
Okay.
And the year before that was about six.
Huh?
Yeah. And mostly we had a lot of returning individuals, but also there were a lot of youth that we started serving more of, because we implemented last year going to the schools earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So we were receiving in the fall the 17 and 18 year olds, or their last 2 years of secondary school. And then in the spring, we started reaching out to those in 16 and 17. But they didn't really start coming in until the following fiscal year, which was 15.
Okay.
And so we got a lot more. And so we provided a lot more services, but not necessarily people in the sense of the older adults. It was the youth got more of our referrals. And so if you look at our expenditures from 1 through 20, and we'll go down to more, 14 to 15, we spent a lot more in assessments. We did more vocational assessment last fiscal year. We hardly did any in 14, but we implemented a program for the summer with SYEP. We did a summer youth institute, and we had about 20 students participate, and we had some of them go through a vocational assessment. And so we did a lot more assessments last year.
What are you assessing?
Their career interests, what they can do, their skill sets.
But that's more than just for 20 students. That
correct.
Oh, okay,
correct.
Right. Thank you.
But we did more of vocational assessments as opposed to the previous fiscal year. As you can also see in college, we went down, and as Andy mentioned, we did go down in our spending, mostly because of our new policy in place.
Mm-hmm.
We probably won't see a bigger impact until maybe this fiscal year and then the next fiscal year. We'll see how that goes. Because we are encouraging our clients to look into what's locally available first.
Yeah.
Locally publicly available first. And locally privately available will be next. And then, yes.
Are you looking at success in college? I know the emphasis is all on college placement.
We are doing our analysis, yes.
Oh, good.
Yeah, we are. And we're trying to do more tracking, better tracking. Our system, System 7, is going to be updated to include the fields that's required by the new law, the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act. We got word yesterday that those fields will be phased in starting at the end of this month. And so we will have more data at the beginning of the process when we do our intake of their reading levels or education levels, and we can track them moving forward through our process.
And I work at a university and look at student retention a lot.
Sure.
And so are you also looking at, or you know, what programs, what courses students succeed at, which schools they have better success rates at?
We're looking at those. We're analyzing those.
In terms of schools?
Yes.
Yes.
Right.
We're trying to analyze all that data now. It's hard because we haven't up until now tracked that in the way we've needed to. It's always been an individualized decision in each case, and we haven't done a good job
mm-hmm.
of tracking overall outcomes. And for that huge expenditure, that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that WIOA requires as well is to track measurable gains in education or training. And so we're going to have to be tracking in high school promotion from one grade to the next, and in college moving from, you know, each year.
Mm-hmm.
So by July 1, we're assured by Libra that the systems will be in place to allow us to track that.
Most of the data fields that are required will be available by the end of April, and we will be testing those to make sure that they actually capture what we need and we can enter information. And then once we tested those, most likely in May or June, we will be able to really start tracking those information. We have a field already that's in our forms that we can report on, but not the the deep analysis that
we do. Do you have people to do the statistical analysis so that, you know, you can really, because you want to set up students to succeed.
Yeah, she's back there.
Yeah, we have we have a management analyst, and
perfect.
We specifically were looking with someone who had the kind of research background to be able to do that analysis.
Great. And
including
if it affects policies and procedures, that also falls under Marlene, which she has another person as well who's working with her. So, and we'll be working with you both, I guess, for the policy group. I guess that will be announced. So those are our spending.
I just assume that a dash in the columns means zero.
Correct.
Okay. What happened to on the job training?
Right.
So those were spent expenditures in FY14 provided by our business relations unit.
Okay.
And we had a program called the Talent Preview Program.
But they are listed. See, one of the problems is they updated the Rehabilitation Services Administration 2 report. And so one of the challenges, and the reason that lines 11 through 20 are subtotaled there, is that you see these wild swings in terms of provision, the amount spent, for example. Job readiness training goes from 2,900 to 41,000.
Wow.
Job search assistance from 825 to 1.1 million.
Mm-hmm.
On the job supports goes from 826 to 169. How things were defined were changed in their instructions. So there are two things that happened. One is the talent preview program was reduced significantly, in part because what that program was a program where we would pay wages for 3 months for an employer. What we found was that there were a limited number of employers who participated in that program who actually had positions for people at the end. We have had some employers who participated who have been excellent partners with us. And in those instances, we've continued to provide this support for people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's captured under other down at the bottom. Under other services. So, you know, that's, I think that's where she, because I was asking, so where did this go? Where did that go? Because I know that we reduced it, but did continue to provide it. And we are paying a considerable amount of wages for work experience for students. And I'm not sure where we're going to put that.
I have a few questions, too.
So it's part of it is just reading their definitions and figuring out where things go and having the same person do the report year after year so they define it the same.
For the talent preview, wouldn't that be a good program for the transitional youth that's coming from school, you know, that the 11th and 12th graders, to give them that work experience as well? So is it not going to be funded at all?
Oh, no, it is. And like I said, we have, I believe we've budgeted $500,000 for wages.
More than that.
Right. We've budgeted over $500,000 for wages for students to have paid work experience where we pay the work experience. It's just there is, for those students, clearly not an expectation that it will lead to a job with that employer. It is work-based learning so that they can, you know, develop the kinds of soft skills you need to be successful at work. It's a work experience. It's not intended to move into employment. And interestingly, and this is where the better coordination of the workforce system comes in, I learned coincidentally that at the same time we were evaluating our data a year and a half ago in the talent preview project that the Department of Employment Services was also examining their data in the programs they had that did the same thing. And we made some similar changes in our programs. Department of Employment Services now requires, before they place a person with you, that they will pay the wages, but you have to have a position so that there is the possibility that this person is actually there with you trying out the position and not that you're getting 3 months of free labor and then the person moves on. For students, it's different. It's very valuable to have that work experience, and we can then make the connections, and we are paying the wages, and that's fine. But we've wanted to, and this is where we're still not where I'd like to be, in terms of having a good evaluation between the Department of Employment Services and us, and having policies that are exactly aligned in how we do it. Because one of the things I learned, we had a number of meetings between all of the American Job Center partner agencies. We started as soon as WIOA passed, and we're meeting regularly. Those got off track for a little while, but we're back to them. One of the things we learned early on is that we're all serving the same people. And if they're not the exact same people, they all have the same barriers, they all have the same challenges, they all require the same kinds of supports. So they may not be a person with a disability, but they have the same kinds of barriers. The folks that go to DOES, the people that go to the Office of the State Superintendent, the people who the Department of Human Services is serving. And so aligning our practices is very important.
Romeo, can you go up a little bit back to some, yeah. So the assessments, if I heard correctly, I thought you said there was an increase of assessments from last year to this year, and a large part of that was 14 to 15, and a large part of that was because of like
vocational,
what happened in the summertime. But then
not just the summertime, but there were
a part of it. Yeah, a part of it. So, but it looks like if we're increasing that, and I think the program is expected to expand, and then there's a lot of new programs this year because of WIOA that's going to increase. Should that number for projection for 16
we'll get to 16 in a bit, and I'm glad you asked that question because we'll delve a little bit into that.
Okay.
But were there other questions on 14 to 15? And we'll send this out as well for you.
The other issue with the increase in the expenditures for assessment is the increase in the referrals from the schools where they didn't have current evaluations, and so we had to pay for current evaluations because changes in IDEA did not require what used to be required was a every 3 year actual updated assessment, and now that's not required, so we did have a number of referrals where we had to get current assessments for people.
Can you describe the decrease in income from 14 to 15? I think you said there was a decrease. If you go scroll down. Yeah, there was like, what is that, a few hundred thousand decrease from 14 to 15, but we still pulled down for reappropriated funds?
Mm-hmm.
We were still overmatched by the district, so that allows us to be able to pull down their reapportionment. Because other states are not as overmatched as we are, or are not even close. And
yeah.
So that gives us an opportunity to draw down on the money that's available back in the pot.
So the federal grant that reapportioned funding, that $17,289, that includes the amount of money that was pulled down?
That includes carryover from the prior year. The actual grant amount in that year was $13.8 million, so there would have been some funds carried over from the prior year. The carryover, we get the reapportionment at the end of the fiscal year.
Right.
So there's not time in the district's budget process to add it to that year, so it carries over into the next. So the reapportionment that we received in 2015 will actually help us in 2016. And that's where you see the $18 million federal grant is including the funds that were carried over because of the $3.5 million carried over from FY15.
So I have a question, not to create work, and that is these categories that overlap, and that explanation you just made about carryover and reapportionment, what you're sending us will have a ledger or a legend explaining this? Okay.
We'll try to make it as simple as possible.
That's fine.
It's also,
I'm just trying to compare apples to apples here.
No, I agree. And because the way things are categorized here has changed from one year to the next, we're also trying to catch up.
We'll make sure you guys are fully knowledgeable and aware of how that. Okay.
What we can do, the RSA 2 has not been fine. It's been submitted and is being withdrawn, and there's an adjustment that needs to be made. Will be resubmitted. And so as soon as it's final and we will post it to the Google Docs site, I'll post along with it the instructions
okay.
so that you can see what the definitions for each line are. Federal definitions are often not helpful. It will say, you know, rehabilitation technology. Record here the expenses for rehabilitation technology. I mean, it's, but you'll see the instructions that we're going off of. Sorry, go ahead.
No, and that's fine. And so in, here we are in 16. We're in the second quarter of 16. But here's our projected budget. We factored in here already the amount that we need to reserve for PETS, the pre-employment transition services. And so this year it was about 3.6. That's including a carryover from last year that we did not spend in PETS. And so that's allocated to you know, a lot of the services, direct services provided here, but also to some of our professional services staff who are putting together some events, like you know our youth forum that happens every year. So that's factored in as well because that's going to be workshops on pre-employment transition services. And so that's factored in. As you can see, our total expenses is projected to be about $25 million, with an expected carryover of 46 cents.
Wow.
And so it is a tight budget. And it's tight, again, as Eddie mentioned, is because we had to make this reserve, right? 15% is a big part of our budget. How do we make sure that, one, I mean, it's there, we can't necessarily just touch it for other things, right? It has to be for PETS. How do we make sure that everything else is covered? And so we've done a lot of analysis of how much we should be allocating for each of these types of services. We've worked with our, you know, we've looked at our providers' trends and make sure that there's enough funding in their POs, purchase orders, that they can deliver those services. And AT equipment, because that's, you know, necessary. And so it is a very tight budget. It is a very tight budget. And to answer your question about assessment, we're looking at all of our referrals to RSA that have existing documentation of their assessments. And so if they do have those, are they, one, are they valid enough? You know, if they are SSI SSDA recipients, we should be able to obtain those from our DDD sister agency, which really belongs with DDS anyway, so we can obtain those information. Are those assessments available at the school level? We're working with, and there was a spike here for, it's mostly from the youth, is because a lot of them are not in the special education data system that OSSE has, but it may have been at CRIS, or no, a different system previously that central office had access to, and so we had to ask them, can you clarify, it wasn't there, so we had to do, or it was old, too old, it wasn't valid enough that we had to do our assessments. So we're trying to, I mean, we're not saying 750 is it, but we're trying to say, are there available existing documentation that we can use? Are we contacting DDD enough? Are we collaborating with the schools enough to obtain these assessment reports? Are we able to obtain the names and a release to go, you know, obtain these assessments from a provider or from a doctor? You know, that those types of conversations we were encouraging our counselors to have more of. And so that's really what our intent for the decrease. It's not as big of a decrease. You know, if you look here, we did go up. So.
Or may I offer a question?
Yes, ma'am.
Those assessments include all assessments, not
correct.
Just vocational assessments.
Correct.
Yes.
The way it's defined in the federal policies, it's all lumped into one big category of assessment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why I thought that number would be increased for projected for this year, just because of all the changes that's being demanded from WIOA, right? And so you would have a larger population of persons being serviced, which requires a larger number of assessments being performed. Even if you think about the students who, you know, may not be in the system but may be eligible, that RSA will also have to service.
Well, That goes to, if they have not applied for our service, we don't need to necessarily conduct an assessment on them to determine eligibility. But also, if they didn't apply, have we talked to the schools to obtain those assessment reports?
Okay.
Or the parent or the person. The reality is, if someone has a disability that presents a substantial impediment to employment, in many instances, I expect they're receiving some kind of treatment for that. So we could get something from their current treatment provider. I mean, I think one of the pressures currently is that we've done an excellent job in the last couple of years, 3 years, improving our compliance with the federal requirements regarding timely determination of eligibility and developing IPEs timely. And so, and we've done that by putting a lot of pressure on counselors. So when a counselor meets with a person, sometimes their view is the quicker route to ensure that I'm successful in meeting my 60-day deadline is that I'm going to refer you for a new assessment. And we need to make sure that we're doing everything possible to obtain existing documents rather than referring people. It's a requirement under the regulation, and it's a matter of respect for people, frankly. I mean, people shouldn't be evaluated unless it's necessary. So we are going to be looking more closely at ways that we can get more efficiency on that line.
And I would say, just as a follow-up, do we know if those assessment numbers are coming more from the youth or the adult side? Who's driving these numbers?
RSA.
Everything. It's really,
we've been ordering assessments without much, we need to be more consistent in the fact of trying to find these assessment documentations prior to us ordering them. And so it's really been consistent throughout the agency of ordering assessments as opposed to,
right,
hold on, let's find out if they have one.
Finding out, yeah, if one already exists, and also on the other side, if one is necessary.
Correct.
Yep.
And the fact that we have, I think we engineered our intake unit will assist with that, because now we have counselors who are doing the intake. We have a kind of a different intake process, so now counselors are doing many of the intakes, and they know what to look for, and they'll go ahead and request those documents, you know, during the intake process, the first day that they meet the applicant.
I was just going to say, and this may work for some people, it may not work for others, but a suggested requirement, because I know that even if you make it a requirement, some folks still might not be able to obtain it, but a suggested requirement that when you come and you sign up for services, you bring your latest assessment, just to help the cost.
We used to do that, and Mike and I told them they needed to stop, because people would be turned away because they didn't have all the documents that are, frankly, documents necessary to determine eligibility, and we have 60 days. And so we saw a significant increase in our referral rate over the last few years, from 2,300 in 2013. It was 3,100 and four. I think I've got the, oh, it was, anyway, 2,300 to 3,100. No, it was 12. Was 2,300, 13 was 3,100, 14 was 4,000, and last year was 3,700. So, you know, we've seen a significant increase in our referrals, in our referral rate, which is people that show up at our door and see someone, or show up and ask for services, or file a request for services, because we have tried to lower the bar to get in the door.
Or just to say, you know, if you have it, bring it.
Absolutely. We do send that out in the letter, but we make sure not to make it a requirement, because I wanted to make sure that people are not being turned away when they walk in the door.
Yeah.
But you're right, and you know, because what we saw initially with transition is that we were asking students to provide absolutely everything necessary for eligibility before we accepted an application, and that was unacceptable. The Department of Education told us that. I'd like to take credit for all of it, but I got some helpful guidance from the Department of Education. But you're right, we need to do more work and part about educating people about what will help them move more quickly through the process.
It depends on the disability.
Right. But it also, as Andy mentioned, you know, the support system around them. No, if they have a support system, we should be talking to them about what the documentations that can help them move through the process quicker. Also more of a comprehensive, thoughtful way to go through this process as opposed to one office.
Right.
So I wanted to leave it there because we have 7 minutes and I want to make sure that Marlene has enough time to report.
Talk quick.
But feel free to let me know if you have any other questions.
Thank you.
And this information, as I said, will be included with the information drawn from this will be in the RSA 2 that will be posted on the web, on the Google Docs site. And we can post this as well.
Okay. Good almost afternoon. I will go through as much as I can, but I want you to know that you will receive these reports that I'm about to discuss on Google Docs. So you can review them at your leisure, and then at your next meeting, if you have other questions, you know, feel free to ask. What I'll do is talk briefly about two of our fiscal reports that we're required to file with the U.S. Department of Education, and then three of our data reports. Romeo just went through the RSA 2 report that we're required to file, so I won't talk about that one. But we also have what's called the RSA, and RSA, of course, stands for the Rehabilitation Services Administration, and the RSA 15 report, which is the vending facility report, which reflects the financial activity of the Randolph Shepherd Vending Facility Program. That's also a program within within DC RSA. And so you will receive a copy once that report is approved. You will receive a copy of that too that you can look through. And if you have any questions, feel free to ask. One of our three data reports is the RSA 113, which is the cumulative caseload report. And it's actually submitted to the Department of Education on a quarterly basis, and then the fourth quarter, of course, becomes an annual report. Okay. It becomes an annual report. It analyzes the flow of persons through the VR service delivery system. So a few of our 2015 highlights show that we received 3,128 applicants, 2,073 persons were determined eligible, and 670 persons achieved successful employment outcomes. And that is more than, that's of course for FY 2015, and that's higher than our FY 2014 results. 643 persons achieved successful employment outcomes in FY 2014, and 670 in FY 2015. So we love those kind of results.
This will be posted.
Yes, I can post that along with the actual report.
Great.
As Andy mentioned earlier, the RSA 911 report is the huge report that we have to file, and I have to ensure it's correct. And it has over 200 fields or 200 columns on each person who we served whose case was closed during the fiscal year. And the report is used to compare each state's performance to their categorical peers. And our categorical peers are Hawaii, Montana, New Hampshire, and Rhode Island. And that's based on
that. I'm like,
yeah, I want to go too.
So, population?
I must slow down. Yes, it's based on population, size of the state, plus also the type of program we have. We are called a combined agency, which means we have the general VR program along with our blind services within the same agency. Some states have a general program and then a separate blind agency. Several of the states in our Mid-Atlantic region are like that. But we are a combined program. So when you look at our population and then against other combined states, we are compared with Hawaii, Montana, New Hampshire, and Rhode Island. Okay, and then federal RSA uses this 9/11 data, of course, they analyze it and all across the board in every way they can. And they use those reports also to report to Congress, for their annual report to Congress. And again, the report is on closed cases, so it's not on the persons that we're still serving. And some of the information that's, that you will see when you look at that report, you'll see the age of the persons we work with and who are closed, the types of disabilities, the services provided through the VR program and the supported employment program, the providers and the cost of services provided, and the employment outcomes for persons who achieve successful employment. And I just, yes?
So I just have a quick question. The types of disability, mm-hmm. is that the categories in the order of selection, or is that defined some other way?
Whatever type, that's not the order of selection,
okay.
But the actual type of disability might say deafness.
Okay.
And actually it gives you two columns, because we have to report on two columns. We have to report on the type of disability and the cause. So if a person has a mental illness, then you know what the diagnosis is and then what the cause is. Or if an ambulatory disability, the cause. So you'll be able to look at all that.
All right, thank you.
And I just pulled out a few facts for the persons that we closed successfully in FY15. And those are persons who achieve successful outcomes. 25% of the persons were between the ages of 22 and 30. And 23% of the persons were between the ages of 51 and 60. The average hourly wage for FY15 was $13.52. The lowest wage, hourly wage reported, was $7.75. And that was the receptionist working in Virginia. And the highest hourly wage was $61.75, and that was an attorney working in D.C. Now, what we have, what counselors have to pay careful attention to is where the job is located. And this is under WIOA. This is kind of new, under a tweak to WIOA. Prior to WIOA, prior to this year, all persons had to at least earn the D.C. minimum wage to be considered competitively employed. But now WIOA says, well, they need to at least earn the minimum wage of where the job is located, which helps us out a lot, because the D.C. minimum wage as of July 1 is now $10.50 an hour. For PG and Montgomery counties, it's $8.40 an hour. But it's going up. Actually, I think it went up in October to $9.55. But last fiscal year was $8.40 an hour. But Virginia has the federal minimum wage, which is $7.25.
Wow.
So a person could work at the same job in D.C. that their cousin has in Virginia, and they will earn $3 more per hour for that job. So, yes.
Do you have a breakdown in terms of, you know, bands? Because when you do the mean, you get the attorney. So, you know, what's, you know, the, you know, what percent get the minimum wage? And
you will see all 670 persons we place. So you can analyze
yeah.
it.
Yeah, but you
but
don't
yes,
analyze
yes.
it.
Yes, I do, because I've worked the report with them. Yes, I do.
We do, but there are 1,000 different ways to do so.
Oh, I know.
And so, I mean, we do to some extent, but you will see when you get the 9/11, there are so many things you can do with them.
Yeah.
So my question, so I'm a commissioner on sort of disease commission. So my question is, are there any exceptions to the rules where a person with a disability may want to do national service such as city year for a year or two, without they get an educational award, but they wouldn't necessarily be recorded as a competitive outcome? because the wage would be considered too low?
Are you you said as an entrepreneur?
Talking about like city year,
yeah,
and
city.
Like the other one that you identified recently and said, no, that case isn't closed. That's not employment. So
as an intern. Yes,
exactly. We count those as paid internships.
Okay.
They are remain open until they engage in competitive, integrated
employment. So there is this 22
Yes, Matt is referring to the statuses, such as the intern, as we've talked about several times this morning. That's status 18, meaning they're in training. They're not working. We don't move them to status 22, which he is referencing, which is in employment, until that person is actually working in a job, into competitive integrated position, and then we start counting the 90 days or whatever, no matter how long they're in their internship. Bringing that up. I also just want to mention, you know, D.C. has a living wage, which is currently $13.68. 32% of our placements were at or above the minimum, the living wage. So, and we are still trying to improve on the quality of our placements, and we're trying to encourage persons to use the community college, or UDC. If you're a DC resident, you can go to UDC's community college and take advantage of their workforce training for free. So we're trying to encourage persons to do that, to receive certificates so that they can compete for these jobs, these fast-growing high jobs in high demand fields. And just one other thing I think I want to mention, our top 10 types of jobs that we, the top 10 fields in alphabetical order, bus and truck drivers. I was going to show that. Who was running that slide? Bus and truck drivers, cashiers.
That's right.
Customer service,
man behind the curtain.
Food service related, healthcare, janitorial, which Andy did explain why, office support, retail, stock clerk, and supervisory housekeepers. And three or four of those areas are directly related to the high demand, fast growing industries. So, you know, we're doing well, but we know we need to do better. And I didn't hear, Andy may have mentioned it this morning, but the concept of informed choice, which we work under, which means that the person we're working with decides what it is they want to do after we provide the guidance, and we, you know, try to guide and counsel and all, but ultimately it is their decision. But we try to provide as much information as possible so that they can make an informed choice and become employed, leading toward careers and not just jobs. And I do have to say this, as Andy said, under now we have to track for 2 to 4 quarters out. So whereas before we could place somebody and we could close them successfully after 90 days, 95 days that they quit, now we need to make sure that they maintain their employment for at least a year. You know, so they need to be satisfied with the jobs that they are attaining. So we want to look at that. We're working with our providers for that. Any questions? We will post the reports I referenced. Oh, the 722. That's what you said. Okay, the 722 report documents the number of applicants and eligible individuals who appeal decisions made by employees of the state agency. So that's called our due process. So if we make a decision to either terminate services or reduce services, or if an applicant or a client is, disagrees with something we've said or done, they can file an appeal. They can file in-house, which is called an informal appeal, or they can file a formal appeal to DC's Office of Administrative Hearings. And I will send that report as well. For FY15, we had 7 cases that were carried over from previous years, meaning the judge had not made a decision. We had 7 new cases filed for a total of 14. This year, we've received final orders on 12, so we just had 2 pending cases, and I think that's the lowest in many, many years. Mm-hmm. Just 2 pending cases for the start of FY16. Mm-hmm. So we're doing well with that as well.
What kind of appeals are you getting?
I knew you would ask that. Right.
It's all going to academics. Of course.
We're required to provide, and you will be able to read the decisions in each of them. So that will also be on the site while Marlene looks at her notes to break it down by kind of service.
On the site, you mean
Google Docs.
Yeah.
And an appeal could include more than one complaint. Okay. So 11 had complaints or concerns about their IPEs or the contents of their IPEs. 2 appealed the termination of services or the closure of their case. 2 the quality of VR services, and there's a definition for that. And then 2 had to do with, they filed an appeal, but the judge did not hear the case because of lack of jurisdiction. One was complaining about something from another state and things like that, and just filed. Try me one more time to see if I have it.
So my question is, how easy is it to access the Google Docs? Like, what's necessary and required for all those folks that may not use Google? A Google Doc, what's required?
So, my understanding is, as members of SRC, you will be receiving DC.gov email addresses.
You should all have them. I have mine.
No,
but I got, when I look in the list,
it'll be a while.
They said it's going to be a while.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
What?
Well, I'm just not sure that's, because mine, I only know because I looked myself up in the list. And so let me see. I'll just like look one of you up and see if you're there. You may have it and not know it.
Well, that was the thing that I was talking about earlier. Right. So when I went to my ethics training, they were making it very clear to me that if you're doing official business as a commissioner or what have you, you need to be using that address.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, that's, and they said, well, you'll get it within a couple of days of this thing. And here it is. It was almost like a month ago, and so they're not even following their own policy.
What is that?
That's your email address.
So they may not have received a notice that they have an email address.
So we will send you, each of you, an email using this email address.
But we won't get it.
But we won't get it.
Yeah, we won't get it.
You don't know that that's true.
How would you access it?
Okay, how would you access it?
Sorry, can everyone just speak one at a time? I can only...
Oh, sorry.
They may not have the information that says you have this email address now, here's your temporary password.
Yeah, we don't have any of that.
We don't have any of that.
So I will send something to Mr. Walker. We should have asked him this when he was here. Because I happened to notice that when I looked someone up, that they had this other email address. So they've all been assigned. It's just a matter of whether you've been properly connected.
So the email address is DCBC?
Yes, the email address is your first dot, your last name.
DC.gov?
No, I think it's at DCBC.DC.gov. DC Boards and Commissions. DCBC. Dot DC. Dot gov.
But what's the web? What's the Outlook website? Is it
mail.dc?
Oh, mail. Okay.
But once Andy reaches out to Moda, they'll probably make sure to send out a notice to you all.
Okay.
This is your contact.
I'm legit.
Right.
But
sorry, Andy, make sure they send it out to everyone.
I know, right? Yeah.
Because the password was wrong, and then I asked them to change it, and they just
You can't change it yourself.
No, because I couldn't log in, so whatever they sent me was wrong, and so I said, can you send me the correct one?
Yeah, I had an idea. Maybe I thought maybe Andrew or Matt was communicating to us through this. And
I've been sending emails to whatever email address we have for you. I know we're not supposed to. It subjects your personal email to FOIA requests.
Yeah, right. That's what they were saying. Yeah.
Well, we will definitely follow up and make sure that everybody is on the same page. Anyhow, and I really have one request based on this thing. Is it possible going forward, if there's going to be any handouts or any presentations that's going to be on the screen, could we possibly get that before the meeting so we could possibly review it and have any questions ready for you?
We'll do that.
All right, excellent. Are there any questions?
Next meeting.
Well, before we do the next meeting, just to follow up on the question, how do you get access to Google Docs? Once the link goes out to you, all you have to do is click on the link and you go directly to the actual document.
You have to accept it effectively.
Yeah, you do. You do have to say, like, an invitation has been sent to you to sites for Google Docs. Typically, you just click on the link and you're there. You can see the document.
So are you responsible?
So where they send it is the question.
That's the question.
So the district is working under Google.
Oh,
gosh. Once you have a dc.gov email address, you have access to Google applications. But we will have to invite you to the SRC Google Doc website. And then once you're invited and you accept it, you'll have access to everything we just
discussed. Well, I will talk about the afterward. Are there any questions on the board for Andy or the staff before we break?
Are we allowed in Google Docs? You can edit, and do you want any editing on anything?
You can give permission to edit or not.
Okay.
And so, I think, does that go by document or by person?
Well, what most likely will happen is the documents that are uploaded. We will tell you which documents require your edits,
right.
So but you'll just need to make sure you save it under whatever your name and upload it in there as your edits are. Or you email it back to Andy and he will make sure that your edits are incorporated.
Okay.
But the original documents will be available on the website.
Right. Thank you.
I just wanted to say, since I don't have access to the computer, I'm wondering if you can send that information to me by post.
Sure. If anyone has that issue, please make sure and let us know. If you need it in any alternative format, please make sure that we're aware.
So I'm sending myself an email to my new thing, see if it bounces back. Well, so far.
If you could put it in large print.
They haven't activated it yet, I guess.
All right, so at this time it's 12:15. Yes, are there any final thoughts before we break? The next meeting, which will be March, tell me out, people, March what? March 11th? Tell me out. It's
so
always.
Here's an issue. The next meeting is scheduled for March the 10th at 9:30 a.m., however. That's the date of our performance hearing.
Okay.
And our performance hearing is usually the same day as ODR's performance hearing.
Well,
so I think it might be helpful if we shift that to March 17th.
March 7th, all right.
Because if you or I can't be here.
That's an issue.
Is that bad?
No.
So please mark that on your calendar and we'll send you a reminder as well. So March 17th. The room will be determined. Will be determined in the near future. With that in mind, is there a motion to close? Motion to close?
Yes.
Second.
All
in favor to close?
Aye.
Bye.
There you go. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Happy MLK Day.
Thank you, man.
Well, it didn't come back, so it's there.
Oh, so you said it so it went through successfully?
Yeah, so just now I've
figured out.
Yeah, now I got to figure out how to get to it. So.
Keep these here for the
yeah,
next
yeah.
meeting?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they'll come up.
Yeah, they'll, yeah. So.
children. So I just got to go to mail.dc.gov and figure out how to.
Well, you need your pass, you said that.
I'm saying, but assuming that once you go there, don't you have to.
Yeah, but maybe even before
they won't let you go in and get a password, or?
They have to. They have to take the instructions.
Yeah, I was hoping you would have the same one that we. They give us all the same passwords.
I'm with the Arkansas.
I was hoping yours would be the same, but it's not.
Right, well, nationally provided.
Right, you just don't have a way. Because for those of us who have
but I would love to get business.
We don't care about this.
You know,
just
part
for
my job is
to not use our personal email account. Because you open the potential for your personal email to be set apart for you. But if it's where yours is your URL address, we can use your email account.
Without
imposing any kind of, you know, it's like it doesn't do any good. Because,
I know.
As you know,
that's not my current title, but it was.
And if you don't include it in those things, then I mean, I will say issues related to accessibility. You helped. We tried to help in terms of providing the assessment.
Right.
So
sometimes they curse us to put this in somebody's office, they can closet, and now that's only when nobody knows how to use it.
I won't fire. Last 2 years.
And you don't recognize that it needs to be.
There's only one counselor.
Because I said, they are
right. I can't remember her name.
So that we
can provide I need to inquire with you.
Right.
And then
my, I know many things to do. But beyond that,
and I gave Dale all of our reports. So
they've been given.
Yeah, they can claim that. But my question is, will AT be ported under the rehabilitation technology or it will not be reported?
Oh, it is. It's under rehab technology.
Okay, I wasn't sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's like in any new database, if we may get another one, of God knows, every line, everything like training is clearly defined, demonstrations, you know, and then the performance measures are clearly. So I had to train on not only the new language of what this means, and then the performance measures to go. And
well, in assistive technology, in the regulations, assistive technology is hard because there's two different things that have very similar definitions.
Right.
And
yeah, just I didn't know we were going to have a